Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. Last week, we took a detailed look into season one of Drive to Survive, a Netflix documentary series that provides a behind-the-scenes look into the dynamic world of Formula One racing. Today, we will continue our journey by delving into season two, which covers the 2019 Formula One season. We will discuss the roller coaster of some drivers' careers, the mental toughness drivers must demonstrate to stay in the sport, and highlight the intra and inter team rivalries. We will also get to the bottom of what is silly season and how this year's silly season already produced some wild yet very entertaining speculation.
If I could summarize season two in two words, it would be growing pains. The biggest coup that Netflix achieved in season two was to convince Mercedes and Ferrari, the best two teams on the grid at the time, to participate in providing behind the scenes access. Only for one race, but still, it's unprecedented access to their team principals, drivers, and how their teams operate. Which is good news for us, Aaron, because our favorite drivers were featured.
For fans who have not seen season two, this is your warning that the spoilers are about to roll in. Ina, who stood out to you, whether it's a driver, team principal, or a behind-the-scenes figure?
Daniel Ricciardo and Gunther Steiner continue to be bright stars and stood out again. But the new breakout star was, for me, Toto Wolff, the team principal in Mercedes. He exuded such supreme confidence and air of superiority, which is understandable since 2019 was still an amazing season for Mercedes, and they've been on a roll since 2015. Yet Drive to Survive managed to show him also being very vulnerable, specifically when he reflects on his friendship with Niki Lauda. Niki joined the board in Mercedes in 2012 and was instrumental in getting Lewis Hamilton to join Mercedes the next year. What we did not know and get a glimpse of is how close he and Toto was. And whenever Toto talks about Niki, it is with such warmth, such deep sadness, because Niki died in May 2019, right in the middle of the season that they were portraying in season two. Everything was raw, and Toto was so open and transparent when reacting to it that it really makes you root for him, find out more about him. And for our listeners, we will definitely get more into Toto in future episodes. So Aaron, who was the star of the season for you?
Well, I'm a big fan of Toto. I love that we're both in agreement on Toto Wolff and Mercedes. How about we get into what are the best breakout moments of the season?
For me, it was the resilience and fortitude of young drivers. As Toto Wolff says, the best F1 drivers have talent, nurture, adversity, and overcoming adversity. The overcoming adversity was front and center at Spa, the first race after Red Bull's driver swap, in which Pierre Gasly was unceremoniously demoted from Red Bull to Red Bull's sister team, at that time called Toro Rosso, and one of the rookies for 2019 season, Alex Albon, finally got the call up to the main team, Red Bull. At Spa, during qualifying, there was a horrific accident in Formula 2, which is a feeder series that shares the track with Formula 1, and Antoine Hubert tragically lost his life. Antoine competed in lower series with a few young drivers who were on the grid in 2019, and that includes Pierre Gasly, Alex Albon, and Charles Leclerc. Their devastation was very palpable, and they had to race the next day and achieve the best results possible. Charles Leclerc won at Spa for his first win in Formula One. Drive to Survive decided not to show it, except for a billboard that announces him as a winner. Albon finished fifth for his first race with Red Bull, and Pierre Gasly finished ninth. And combined with Alex's inexperience and all of their mental anguish over what they just witnessed with Antoine Hubert, it was very impressive how they were able to rise above it and show on the track why they belong in Formula One and achieve the results that, in Christian Horner's words, were what Antoine would have wanted. What about you?
I can't imagine having to have been brought to the reality of how dangerous the sport is, watching one of your own die in a crash the day before and then have to perform like that. How does that not stop any driver in your tracks? Because Horner even said, when you look in those drivers' eyes, you realize the risk they take on every single time they get in the car. And then the mental toughness to then switch and focus and drive. And, you know, Albon makes the comment about your mind goes to this really gritty place. And that's what really helped him overtake and move forward and to do that and to be so young and so poised and be able to do that and suppress the emotion and fear of being in the car and realizing that that could have been you and to get those results beyond comprehension. I think for us mere mortals who are not F1 drivers, it leaves you in awe of what they can do and the risk that they take on.
Well, that was my question. So a lot has been said about Formula One being a young men's game. So could a youth actually be helpful to be able to switch so completely and be so in tune and not let all the sadness and all the drama and heaviness and tragedy overwhelm you? Because I feel like if you keep experiencing life, that cannot not bleed into your performance on the track. And that could also actually be of a benefit to young drivers, the fact that they're young. And as Pierre Gasly even said, that was the worst thing that ever happened to him. So as tragic as it was, and I'm sure they were in pain, I think they probably could have handled it better at that age than, for instance, even now, although they're still super young.
I agree. I think men in general feel like they're 10 feet tall and bulletproof. You saw it in Rush when Niki Lauda retired from the race at the end because he kept seeing visions of his wife. You hit a point where you have something to lose, and that is when you're done as a driver because fear and reality creep in. So I think you're right. The younger you are, the more fearless you are, and therefore you're able to compartmentalize. Even though you would think age and experience would help you, I could see that going either way. There's a lot of on-track incidents in season two, which caused a lot of inter-team dynamic and some frustrations that boiled over. You want to take the lead on this one, since Ferrari had the bulk of those?
They did. And the race that I thought was most exciting definitely had an element of the Ferrari drivers not being on the same page. I have to stand corrected from what I mentioned last time, that Netflix never goes to Brazil. Of course, they had to prove me wrong. I'm going to Brazil in 2019. And Brazil always delivers. This time, again, like the last time, the race that I like the most are shown from Carlos's Sainz's point of view. But it was amazing because Carlos managed to go from P20 to P4. And that wasn't even the end, because due to Lewis Hamilton's penalty, he ends up being P3, which is unbelievable. And as he was going through the field, of course, the drama just kept piling on. There was a lot of luck involved. Obviously, the two Ferraris very famously crashed into each other. But that was not the most amazing thing that happened. For example, Alex Albon, who has been again warned over and over again how close he had to be to Max Verstappen, at one point was running P2. And just when you thought that, oh, this is going to be a triumphant moment, here comes Lewis Hamilton. And however, P2 actually goes to Pierre Gasly, which completes the best revenge arc in this season. Because after his unceremonious dumping by Red Bull, that horrible race in Spa, he just needed to prove himself. And so he finished second to, of course, Max's first place. But still, that was a glorious moment. And combine that with Carlos Sainz's heroics just makes the most interesting on-track action for me. What about you, Aaron?
To have Pierre get that podium after losing his friend, after losing his seat, which I do want to talk about, because the expectation and how little time they get to really prove themselves, I feel like Yuki changed the tide on that. So that will be for future to discuss.
And I want to add in future seasons, especially season 7, I hope they show how Red Bull reversed themselves to the point where we all went, now is the time to make the switch.
And they did it. The most unique podium goes to Carlos Sainz for getting P3 after Hamilton had the penalty points, and therefore he bumps from P4 to P3. The fact that it's his very first Formula One podium, but he's not celebrating with the other drivers. In a way, it's really neat. He gets to celebrate with his entire team because as they're deconstructing everything around him, they're up there having their own celebrations.
And it's a great point that you bring up that podium victory because I actually thought McLaren was one of the most cohesive teams on the 2019 grid. They didn't show it that much as we watched it, but you could see that Zak Brown was very happy with Carlos Sainz and what he brings to the team. You saw how Carlos was committed to working hard and making sure that McLaren improves. And spoiler alert, they definitely do. And even though they didn't show it a lot, you saw how well he and Lando Norris, as his teammate, got along. In fact, they have a whole word, Carlando, devoted to them, and they're still good friends. Everything in that team was working together to produce the best result, and it was just ultimately very satisfying to see the team really celebrate his P3.
It was well deserved. You could see the team really laying down a strong foundation with Lando Norris and then Carlos and Zak Brown and their whole culture and how they look at the team and how they're building the team and where they want to go. They really were getting those building blocks in place. So for them to get that win was great. Having Carlos get that win after losing his seat at Renault, it was much more beneficial for him to go from Renault to McLaren than Ricardo to go from Red Bull to Renault.
In terms of dysfunctional team, Aaron, do you have a winner?
Renault starts off super excited to have Daniel Ricciardo, who's able to win all these races, and then everything just goes downhill. It's baffling a bit to see how quickly they went on this downward spiral. One thing after another in every race. And then for Hülkenberg to lose his seat to Esteban Ocon.
Just on that point, Hülkenberg was obliterated by Daniel in terms of his performance. And up to that point, his reputation was he did an incredible thing with very mediocre cars. So finally, to get somebody of Daniel's caliber, see him struggling that much, but beating Hülkenberg so decisively, I think that forced Renault's hand. And also, Esteban Ocon needed a revenge arc.
Esteban did need a revenge arc. It is a good thing to see him back on the grid. It was comical having the conversation filmed by Netflix in the car with Toto calling Cyril and then having them in their press.
Agreed. Also, the amazing Toto moment of talking in French. In fact, we see Toto talking three different languages in season 2, and that is extremely impressive.
I think he actually can speak five.
I heard six, but we will definitely fact check that and come back to you later. So for me, there were a couple of more candidates for the most dysfunctional team. One would have to be Williams for not even able to produce a working car. I just want to say one thing about it is that I love George Russell's quote about driving in the Williams. It's like driving on your own. There's nobody in front of you and there's nobody behind.
Oh, I felt so bad for him. They should have had him retire the car.
It actually produced a lot of jokes and memes about George staying out until the last possible moment. So anytime he actually is not performing that well, the jokes come out that he's still finishing the race. But we now know where it comes from. And I always wondered, and I completely forgot about that moment. The other team that I thought could be in the running for the most dysfunctional team is, of course, Ferrari. They're their worst enemy in that they actually got Charles Leclerc on a driver number two contract, which I wouldn't advise if you're not sure who your number two driver actually is. Because guess what? He becomes extremely fast right away and he beats his teammate, Sebastian Vettel, who is a four-time world champion and really wants to win with Ferrari. The team has to prioritize Vettel, even though they have a much better prospect who's very clearly faster. So that was very frustrating to see. But I have to say, I really loved Vettel's comment that there's one thing to win on the grid and another thing to win in a Ferrari. Because there's always extra pressure. There's always shenanigans that has nothing to do with you. That a lot of people say it's Ferrari doing Ferrari things. And that was in full display in season two.
We've seen that a handful of times when a driver ignores team orders and you cringe and you get a little angry about it. There have been so many times where principals have had to manage the egos of their drivers, driver one, driver two, and how difficult that is. And Bottas touched on it a little bit because he goes, or driving with Lewis Hamilton, it's difficult because you know that you are number two. And the expectation is instead of your best result at times, it is going to be the team result. And that is hard to manage those egos when you, as Russell said, you're one of 20 with thousands of other people wanting these seats. And Ferrari did not do a good job in 2019 managing that driver frustration at all.
We can move on to what our favorite or best episode. What's yours, Aaron?
Checkered flag, Lewis Hamilton celebrating his sixth with the confetti cannon and everybody else. I just love that he's 8-time world champion and you get to watch each of these as we go along.
Yes, as you probably heard correctly, Aaron did refer to Lewis Hamilton as a Time World Champion, and we promise in 2 episodes' time, Aaron will present you with her reasons for why he has to be considered an A-Time World Champion, and I will not have anything more to add to that. But I do have to say, episode 10, which is called Checkered Flag, is my favorite episode. It brings to the climax the drama with Pierre Gasly. Obviously, we talked about that insane Brazil race. And the best thing it does is it creates real great nuggets for us to ponder over as we wait for season three. Especially, it has some amazing quotes. So, Aaron, are you ready? Because I want to share these quotes with you and see who you think actually said those quotes, because some of them were surprising even to me.
I'm intrigued. Let's do this.
All right. So the first quote is said by a team principal or a team owner. And your choices are Zach Brown, Toto Wolff, Gunter Steiner, or Lawrence Stroll.
Okay. I know if there's an F-bomb in here, the obvious answer. So, okay.
It's not.
Hit me.
It's very short. F1 is not a fair playing field.
Papa Stroll.
You are correct, because it's the most ironic thing he could ever have said.
I know, especially because I think that is when they were summarizing going into having the financial cap, right? Leading into 2020, some of those regulations.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay. This other quote is also by a team principal.
Okay.
Your choices are Gunter Steiner, Christian Horner, Toto Wolff, or Claire Williams.
Okay.
And the quote is, "I'm fed up with drivers leaving us to go somewhere else. We nurture all this talent and then they go off."
Ooh, that's tricky. That was in season two?
That was in season two.
Horner?
No, that was Claire Williams in a rant that she went on in a car. Which is hilarious, because at that time, I'm like, you don't have any drivers who are able to go anywhere else, because you got a rookie who signed for 3 years and you are going to hold him to that contract. And you have poor Robert Kubica. And this was like the last chance to do anything in a Formula One. So where is he going to go? It was very out of character, very interesting context. But there you go.
Okay. All right. We're 1-1.
Final. It's by a driver.
Okay.
Your choices are Carlos Sainz, Charles Leclerc, Daniel Ricciardo, or Lewis Hamilton.
Oh man, you have all my favorites.
And they are. So this is one of them talking about their teammate.
Okay.
You should not feel sorry for your competitor. There may be people who have been luckier than him, but many people who are unlucky.
Man. Carlos?
I knew you would pick him. But no, that was Daniel Ricciardo, another unexpected one.
Man, you killed me this go round. All right.
Thank you. I tried because when I heard these quotes, I had to write them down because I couldn't believe who it
I'm
was. Who was
shocked. I would have thought for sure because Carlos has a whole series on luck. And to quote him, he said, I don't like to call it bad luck. I like to say, like, things are not going toward me ended. That is why I thought you were going with Carlos there.
I knew you would be a little confused,
You totally threw me on that. Yes.
but Daniel Ricciardo was talking about Nico Hülkenberg and his inability to get a podium.
Oh, yeah.
So it was
Okay.
appropriate, but a little harsh, and I did not expect it from Daniel.
No, but I got to tell you, they all get their elbows out, but that is a dig. Although they did laugh about it during a press event, and Hülkenberg called Ricardo an a-hole for it. Now it is time for wild card topics, or AKA, let's hand out some superlatives. This season, I have two superlatives that I would like to give out. First would be for best team culture, and that would go to Mercedes. They have a no blame culture, which admittedly by Toto is extremely difficult, especially after mistakes are made. But at the end of the day, they win as a team, they lose as a team. And you see it after the Germany Grand Prix. Hamilton comes in, he's extremely distraught and upset. Toto says, no, we gave you a minute pit stop and we didn't set you up for success. And to paraphrase Niki Lauda, he said, everyone makes mistakes. That's when we learn the most. And you really see over and over again throughout season two how Mercedes does that with the team. My other superlative would be for the 2019 season, the biggest sponsor fail goes to Rich Energy. That was a debacle. And kudos to Haas for how they handled it. What about you, Ina? What are your superlatives for season two or the 2019 season?
Well, for my wild card topics, I have a superlative, and then I'm continue on with my lost in time reflections. For the funniest scene, I actually have two choices, and Aaron, you can judge which one you like better.
Okay.
So one is between Toto and Gunther. It's when Toto comes late to a press conference, and Gunther says, "You are the most important one, so you can be late." Then, this is great. Toto switches to German, and he says, "Be more intelligent today. I'm always intelligent. You just don't get my humor." Scene. The other one is when Hülkenberg asks Cyril, "When will we get a Renault F1 team jet?" And Cyril answers, "When you get the first podium."
I would put that under most cringeworthy superlative. We'll leave funniest scene between Toto and Gunter, but move that one into cringeworthy because unfortunately Nico is still podiumless. That was just awkward in general.
It was, but it was surprisingly good comic timing for both of them. For my Lost in Time, the things I noticed on rewatch that resonate more now than when I first saw it, I just have to mention the credits. So every time they do a little tease and then they do the credits where a car comes into a pit stop. And if you notice, the car changes with episodes. This time, I was paying attention to not only what kind of car, meaning is it a Red Bull, is it a Mercedes, is it a Ferrari, but also if we could see the number on the car. Because yes, I am that much of a fan. I actually know the numbers. I've noticed whenever they showed a Red Bull, it was number 33, which is Max's old number. And then the Ferrari car that they show has number 16, which is Leclerc's number. And just to completely blow your mind, Aaron, I paid attention last episode, and whenever they showed a Ferrari, it was number 5, which is Sebastian Vettel's number.
I would say because this was Leclerc's first year driving for Ferrari, he got bumped up at the end of last season. So last season, that would make sense that they would show Vettel's number, right?
No, because last season they weren't focusing on Ferrari, so why would every credit use a Ferrari?
Because it's Ferrari.
I
They were
still.
probably trying to entice them to come in. I mean, it's Ferrari.
Very fair. So the other thing, lost to time, I noticed how Nico Hülkenberg was trying to explain to a producer who asked him what is silly season work. was by describing the premise of musical chairs in the most awkward, long-winded, completely incomprehensible way. So, Aaron, have you ever wondered when and how Sealy Season came to be?
Yes, I always have.
Okay, what century do you think it was invented?
I don't know. I would say the 20th.
It would make most sense, but it actually came into being in the 19th century, and it came into Formula One from the world of journalism. It was used to describe the time when Washington politicians went on vacation during the summer and the European governments had their summer break. So newspaper journalists had to find some pieces of information, even if it was very speculative, to fill their columns.
Interesting. And that aligns because in Formula One, silly season usually falls during summer break, and the break in action between the last race of the season and the first race of the following season. It refers to speculations and sometimes facts about drivers and other team members' movements between teams. Last year, 2024, the silly season started before the official start of the race season with the announcement of Lewis Hamilton moving to Ferrari for 2025. That was leaked in February of 24. From that moment on, silly season never ended.
It really never did. And this month has been filled with some actions that would fit within the silly season umbrella for the 2025 season. But the biggest speculation of all has been reserved for the alleged move by Max Verstappen to Aston Martin. To provide some context, Aston Martin is currently the team that is partly owned by billionaire Lawrence Stroll. And of course, has his son Lance as one of the drivers with a guaranteed seat. Last year, Aston Martin finished a very distant fifth, but Papa Stroll was instrumental in pouring money into the project by making Aston Martin the best and most competitive team by building a brand new state-of-the-art facilities, luring two-time world champion and the oldest driver on the current grid, Fernando Alonso, into the second seat, and last year, bringing in on board Adrian Newey, the genius car designer who designed all of Red Bull's winning cars. Now, he set his sights on getting the arguably best driver on the current grid, four-time world champion Max Verstappen, into one of the seats. But which seat is he gonna get? Aaron, any guesses?
This is so tricky because you see reports that say it's going to be a seat swap. Alonso and Max are going to switch. Helmut Marko is out saying that can't happen. Max has a contract through 2028. There's always some truth to these rumors. You also see commentary out there saying that Newey thinks that they should fire Lance, and Lance has not performed or beat Alonso. And in most teams, if there was not the father-son relationship, I think any other principal and owner would have already changed out the driver. I feel like that is the elephant in the room. And the fact that Newey is coming in and saying he's not up to par, he's this far behind. And it's very fact-based on the reasons why there's still that emotional aspect that father and son want to be world champions together. So that's going to be curious how that unfolds. What do you think?
Well, a couple of things. I actually not sure that both Papa Stroll and Lance Stroll want to be in Formula One. I think Lance definitely has other interests. He has not shown himself engaging or wanting to participate in a lot of pomp and circumstance surrounding Formula One. And I get it. He could be because he's more on a shyer side and doesn't want to be in the public as much and hates interviews. I think most of them do, but he seems to really not care as much and not wanting to even try or attempt to appear more interested. So I think if it was up to Lance, he might be willing to call it a day. But I also think Papa Stroll is kind of driving that relationship. And as long as he still sees Lance as part of his Formula One journey, it will not change. My biggest issue is, why would Papa Stroll want Max Verstappen? Because if the whole point of him being in Formula One is to make Lance Stroll a champion, why would you put somebody in the car if the car is as good as they claim it will be by 2026? So let's hold our horses. It's not going to happen that soon. Then you wouldn't put somebody who can beat your son to that world championship, because we know Max can put a less amazing car in first place just by himself. What necessarily would that transaction bring to Papa Stroll? Which makes me think, if he wants Max Verstappen, maybe he is ready to let Lance go.
Possibly. I think in the end, that really comes down to the complicated relationship between fathers and sons. If Max does switch with Alonso, maybe the world championship is going to be the constructor side of things as a team, instead of having Lance win the driver's championship. So then that way they could still say, as a team, we're champions.
That's possible. But I also think that in addition to Red Bull car now not having Adrian Newey to work on and be as good as it used to be, there's also the engine issue, because Red Bull is working on its own engine and they're losing the Honda relationship. And Honda was the engine that powered all of the Red Bull's winning cars. I'm sure everyone is going to be shocked where Honda is going to go next. It is Aston Martin. So for Max, it could be an enticing deal, because he gets the car with the designer that he knows is going to create something special. He's going to get an engine that he knows is a winning formula. And if it's true that Papa Stroll is offering him $1 billion, he can do so much with that money and be set for life. So I can totally understand how Max would consider this move advantageous. What I don't believe is that Red Bull would want Alonso. Red Bull is all about developing and promoting talent. In fact, they've been hampered in the last couple of seasons, and we'll get into it when we're in a future season of Drive to Survive, that they haven't been developing their young drivers as much as they did in the past. So Alonso is now the oldest driver on the grid, and he keeps saying that 2026 is going to be his last year in Formula One. I don't see much of an upside for a swap with Max for Fernando.
Let's wrap this up with our season takeaways from 2019 and how we think that's going to set everything up for the next season of Drive to Survive.
Overall, this season of Drive to Survive very much resembles Daniel Ricciardo's career journey. We've seen him start on a high with the Red Bull, celebrating some memorable wins, and then decide to switch to Renault. And in this season, his journey with Renault did not pan out exactly how he hoped. But he still has hope for the future. He still retains the charm, and he's still joyful about what's to come. Of course, the dreams of world championships are a little bit further away. This is exactly how season two feels. There are a lot of things to chew on, some exciting on-track action, very questionable driver swaps, of course, tragedy and overcoming adversity. And there's a lot of hope that there will be more excitement for the future. Most of the time, the episodes are very muted. This is not the most memorable. This is not the most exciting, but still a good foundational season of Drive to Survive.
For me, the big themes and takeaways would be resilience, which we talked quite a bit about, the mental strength that's required by the drivers. We also hear a lot about pressure, how they handle pressure. I can't believe I'm going to do this, but to quote Lance Stroll, diamonds are made under pressure. You see how the highs are very high and the lows are very low. And that is truly the theme that seems to define the racing season itself. What was curious to me, aside from all of the pressure moments that you saw with different drivers, is how few races they really have to be able to get it right. It is a bit unfair to the drivers, in my opinion. It's even the same with Ricciardo and Renault. Everything's different about that car. If you're switching teams, you have to basically rewire yourself for how a new car is. And even the best of the best are struggling with that, you know? And it is also interesting, as you start to see the role that advisors play within the teams with Helmut Marko, Adrian Newey, you know, even for Claire Williams, her dad is in the background. Those are big shoes to fill, and how those impact. It was really disappointing to see Patty Lowe and how he did not take it on the chin, as Buxton said, for the failure of producing a car. And then the question comes, you know, does that then go above to Claire Williams herself? And because ultimately, as multiple principals have stated, the buck stops with them. I just found it very curious between the pressure as an overarching theme. You saw some success and redemption wins from a few of the drivers, which gives you something to cheer for. But yes, it seemed a bit of a stretch for some of the storylines overall for 2019. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
But I'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout to your favorite silly season subject. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.